You're listening to Currently Binging, the podcast about all things TV and movies. Stay connected by rating, subscribing, and commenting on whatever platform you're listening to us on. And now for this week's episode. Hey guys, it is Eva, and I'm here with another episode. On this episode, we will be discussing Glass, which stars Samuel L. Jackson, Bruce Willis, James McAvoy, and Sarah Paulson, directed and written by M. Night Shyamalan. But before we get into that, I just want to really quickly let you guys know that if you do listen to the podcast, I would highly appreciate it if you stop right now and just go and rate within whatever platform you're listening on. If you're listening on iTunes, you just go to the podcast page and you can rate right there. You can either just rate it and not leave me a comment, or rate and comment. Comment would be helpful because that way I know that you guys are still enjoying the content that I'm putting out there. So with all that said, let's get into this, because I don't know if this is going to be a long one, but I don't think it's going to be quite a quickie, because as I was sitting there and I was writing down my notes, or typing my notes, if you will, I had a lot of notes, but not enough for it to be super long. So we shall see. This is why I'm hesitating to call this one a quickie. But yeah, so let's jump right into it. Per usual, we are going to start off with our data, our metrics, if you will. So Glass, it just came out over the weekend. It came out on the 18th, and I actually did go see this on the 18th, which you guys know me. It really depends on the movie if I'm going to actually go see it on a Friday night, if you will, because I have not gone to the theater and seen a movie on a Friday night in a long time, because I usually try to avoid it, because that's usually when most people will go, and then we have to deal with all of the hoopla that happens in a theater when there are a lot of people. So I usually like to go to the matinees because, one, there are less people usually, and it's cheaper, because, you know, movies are not cheap. They're expensive, kind of, depending on what format you want to see it in and what theater you go to. So yeah, so I guess before I get into the metrics, I could just talk about the theater experience. So I went to the AMC Metreon, which is right in the city, like literally off of Market, or you can get there off of Market in San Francisco. So it's like San Francisco and 4th, or not San Francisco, 4th. San Francisco is a city. I believe that is Mission and 4th that it sits on. But yeah, so I went to that one. It was an 8 p.m. show. So like for real Friday night screening, and the theater was full. I think as far as if I had to talk about the ages, I think it was pretty, for the most part, like 20s to 30s kind of a range. Didn't really see any kids in there, even though this is rated PG-13. I didn't really see a lot of young people in there. Couldn't really tell you if there were older people in there. For the most part, the theater, everyone behaved well. There were a few moments where people were talking. There was some shushing going on very aggressively. But overall, I mean, for a Friday night movie theater, it was actually not a bad viewing experience. So with that out of the way, let's actually get into these numbers. So currently on Rotten Tomatoes, Glass has a 36% critic score and a 79% audience score. So I think that because I used to only just talk about the critic score, but because I feel like you should take in everyone's, kind of like you shouldn't just base going to see something on the critic score, because like I say, one person can like something and then another person might not like that same thing. So everyone has a differing opinion about things. So that's why I started also mentioning the audience scores. And since I've been doing this, this is not the first movie that's had a drastically different audience score from the critic score. And that to me just further tells me and shows, I think, what the difference is between what people are going to the movies to see, especially when you get into this genre, because this does essentially fall within the superhero genre. So especially when you get into this genre, I think audiences are more so going to see it because it's like a feel-good movie. If it makes them, if they enjoy it, watching it. Why is that a tongue tire, guys? I don't know. If they enjoy it, watching it from all the way through. And there may be some things where it's like, oh, that wasn't the best, but it still was an enjoyable movie. They're giving it a favorable rating versus critics are going in and dissecting the movie as they should because they're critics. And I've talked about critics before. I can't pinpoint the exact episode that I talked about it on, but I have discussed my feelings on what a critic is and what a critic should be when we start talking about film critics, because like they're a critic for a reason. So they're going in and they're like dissecting the movie, or they should be dissecting the movie based on, you know, the look of the movie, the direction, the production, the storyline, the plot, the pace of like all that stuff should be taken into account in their review. So with that being said, I could see why it could be low, even though I wasn't really expecting it to be this low. Cause you know, our Rotten Tomatoes, I think once you get under, I have to relook to see what the exact percentage is, but after you, for now, we're gonna say 50%. Once you get like under the 50s, then the tomato turns into like a green blob, which means it's rotten. So I do feel like a lot of people, and I am one of those people who will see a movie and see that Rotten Tomato score, and that will determine one, if I'm going to watch it, and two, in what context I'll watch it if I do end up watching it, which is why I do also appreciate, because I still have cable. I am still debating, guys, if I'm going to cancel cable because it is so expensive and I have so many streaming services, and I feel like people are rolling out, some of these streaming services are rolling out packages for live TV that could possibly work for me and be cheaper than a cable package, but that's not what this is about. But yeah, so I do still have cable. I have Xfinity. And when you do go over to On Demand to watch some of these movies, you will see that they pull in both the critic and audience scores from Rotten Tomatoes, which I appreciate for that. So I do think that we're seeing a trend of, at least when you go to consume this content, both scores being taken into account. And I hope that continues, because I feel like that gives a full picture of what to expect going into the movie. Because if I see a 36% Rotten Tomato score and a critic score and a 79% audience score, then I'm going to go into the movie saying, okay, might be some heavy plot issues, might not be really great pacing. There are going to be some definite, very obvious issues viewing this movie, but overall it'll be an enjoyable, don't really think about it type of a movie. Hopefully that makes sense, but that's just kind of my viewpoint as far as when I talk about these Rotten Tomato scores or view these Rotten Tomato scores. So if you're one of those people who are just like, critics suck, and I'm seeing a lot of this, we've been seeing it over the past couple of years, but it's getting even more apparent where people are just not, what's the word? They're not holding the critic's score to a, well, they are holding it to a high standard, but they aren't holding it to a point where it's like, oh, that is a critic score and it's appreciative. I don't know if I'm explaining this correctly, but it's getting to the point where a lot of it is just like, all the critics suck. They're all jumping on the same bandwagon. Once one critic hates something, then they all start hating something. And so that's why, and kind of like trying to justify these low scores. So I am seeing a lot of that. But yeah, I feel like I talked a lot about Rotten Tomatoes, but I just wanted to voice that because in doing this, I'm starting to notice a trend. And yeah, so cinema score, which you guys know I do like to talk about. So cinema score, this has a B. I'm not really surprised by that. I did go see this with other people, and a lot of people, I think, because this movie is a part of a trilogy, a lot of people were excited to see this movie to kind of see how this all concludes, especially coming off of Split, which I think was very well received, at least audience wise. I didn't talk about Split on the podcast, so I never really looked at like the scores from anywhere or the numbers from anywhere, but I did watch the movie and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But yeah, so going into this, I do think a lot of people were looking forward to seeing kind of how this whole Unbreakable trilogy wrapped up. So number wise, this was technically a holiday weekend because Monday was Martin Luther King Jr.'s holiday. So it was kind of a holiday weekend, but the numbers I have are just for like the actual opening weekend and then to date. So domestically for opening weekend, 40.3 million. And then to date domestically, 46.5 million. And then total domestic plus international is about 100.4 million. And apparently the budget for this movie was $20 million. So, I mean, I think we're going to be fine here. So, yeah, let's just get right into this. So, I told you guys, I watched Split. I also watched Unbreakable. Unbreakable came out in 2000. And when, honestly, going into Split, I didn't even realize that it was like part of a thing. So going into it and watching it, which also speaks to how separate Unbreakable and Split can stand on their own versus Glass, where, you know, of course they bring everyone together. So it's kind of like, okay, I need to know who these people are. But I think that speaks well to how good Split stood alone, because I honestly didn't know that this was part of anything. And I had to sit and think if I had actually saw or actually seen Unbreakable, and I hadn't. And I was like, when does this come out? 2000? I'm not going to tell my age. But I was like, 2000, I was still watching a lot of movies. So it is possible that I saw it when it was on TV at some point, and it just did not register with me, because I did go back and I watched Unbreakable literally on Friday before going to see Glass, and some of the scenes seemed familiar, but overall I was just like, some of the scenes familiar, but I could not tell you 100% if I actually saw this when it first came out, because 2000, that's like 19 years ago. And yeah, 19 years ago. And then we get the sequel, Split, in what, 2017, I believe. So huge gap between two movies, which is also why I didn't even realize that it was part of a series or a trilogy, if you will. So we have that. So I went back, I watched Unbreakable. Watching Unbreakable today, I was like, okay. And I kind of felt this kind of has similar themes to Glass, and I kind of felt the same way a little bit with Glass as far as the pacing of the movie. I honestly, watching Unbreakable, was like, I mean, it was an enjoyable movie to watch, but it also was kind of like there wasn't really much to the story. I mean, there was much to the story, but it wasn't really a lot to be like, this is going to launch a thing. Because it kind of felt like once you got to the end, it was like, oh, okay, so Mr. Glass, or Elijah, as he was in Unbreakable, was pretty much evil, and he was plotting this, or pretty much a terrorist, and all these things that had happened up to this point when we meet David, and he also was involved in his train crash or whatever. And so then, like, how it's revealed, it's like, oh, it was just like, huh, okay. But it also was like, this is 2000. So I'm not going to really harp too much on Unbreakable, because that's not what this is about. So kind of like the whole plotting and the pacing and kind of the point, like for me, when I'm watching something, I'm like, so what is our end goal? What are we working up to? How are we getting there? And then once we get there, does it make sense? If I was to walk this backwards, does it make sense? So that's kind of how I view things. And so that's kind of how I felt about Unbreakable. And then we got to Split, which I had no idea was a part of anything. And I really enjoyed Split. I thought James McAvoy did really good, just, and the same with this movie, really good portraying those 23 different personalities and just switching from one to the other without any hiccups, and really making you believe that he was each one of those individual personalities every time he switched. And I think his performance, honestly, in the theater was the one that everyone was just eating up. Like, every single time, especially when he switched to, I didn't write his name, but the kid who's 11, I believe he's 11 or is he 9? He's 11 or 9 for forever. When he switches to him, like, everyone just eats it up. So I think that his performance, and I've seen him in multiple things up to this point, and for me, his performance as Kevin and his horde of personalities is probably one of my fave performances from him. So, I mean, we're kind of getting to character performances. But yeah, so Split I enjoyed because Split was kind of like, I've seen it classed as a horror thriller, but I don't really think it's horror. And you guys know I don't do horror, but it kind of is a thriller for sure. Kind of psychological to me, but that's just me. So yeah, so that's my brief thoughts on Unbreakable and Split. So going into Glass, I'm like, okay, let's see how we bring all this together. And for the most part, when a lot of it just had made me have questions when we honestly get right down into it. So the whole purpose of this, because there's a twist at the end, and I've seen various article titles on how they're describing this twist. Some people are like, shocking twist, and some people are like, just twist or surprising twist. And I'm just like, I mean, I don't think it was a shocking twist. And then it also depends on what twist are you talking about. And then we get the whole convoluted thrown in there, which you guys know I love to talk about convoluted things, but we get that whole thing thrown in there. And honestly, if you really pay attention, it's not really surprising how things turn out. I think more so my questions were for our subplot characters or our sub characters, like Elijah's mom, the only girl who survived from Split, and then David's son, as all this was like when we get to the end and how everything is playing out, even them getting to this asylum, insane asylum, I still had a lot of questions. Because from the jump, we jump right in, we meet back up with David, and we find out that he started his own security firm with his son, or a security store with his son. And we eventually find out that his wife passed away. And his wife, who's played by Robin Wright in Unbreakable, she passed away. So she is no longer in the picture. So we see that, and they're pretty much have been tracking, or he'll go out and use his powers to track people and what they've done. And so this whole thing that happened with in Split has been on their radar because it was big news because only one girl got away. And so that's kind of how we lead up to David eventually meeting up with Kevin. I think everything in that first act was fine. I had no issues with really. He ends up showing up at the place where he's holding a bunch of cheerleaders. They end up facing off, and then it leads to them going outside, and all of a sudden there are all these police there. And that's when we meet Sarah Paulson's character, Dr. Ellie Staple. And I'm like, where did they come from? How did they know to be there? Like, those were my immediate questions. And I feel like for David's son, Joseph, I believe was his name, those would have been some questions I would have had, because they didn't even take his dad to jail. They took him to this asylum. And I would be like, okay, I have questions. I need answers, kind of a thing, because it just did not feel right from the beginning, the way that they were being handled. More so for Kevin, it felt right because, you know, he has a personality disorder, but for David, it didn't really seem right to put him in this place. So immediately I had questions, but then we're in there and we finally find out what has been going on with Glass, or Mr. Glass, Elijah. And apparently they've been drugging him since he's been in there, since pretty much Unbreakable. So they've been heavily drugging him. And I'm like, if you guys are saying that he believes that he is the super smart individual, why didn't anyone think that, maybe he might not take his medicine and he might hide it? I feel like I'm being very like picky here, but like those are some of the things that were coming in my mind. So, 'cause when he lifts that armrest, there are a ton of pills in there and no one even really thought about it. So I don't know. For me, those are some immediate questions. And even for Sarah Paulson's character, I think she did a great job like being the psychiatrist, but also creating enough tension that you don't really fully trust her motives. Like, you don't really know what's motivating her, because yeah, she's saying, oh, you guys believe that you are these people, like you have these powers, but I'm going to prove that this is all in your head type of a thing. But then there's still some underlying thing where you just still don't really 100% trust her. And I was getting that from being an audience. So I don't know why like the family members and loved ones weren't getting it. Even when she bought in the only girl and was like trying to use her to manipulate Kevin, like who would do that in a real insane asylum or like a psychiatric place? Who would do that in real life, or not in real life, but like in a real facility? So that, I think she did a great job with that. And then when we get to the point where we find out, it's revealed that Mr. Glass is pretty much deceiving everyone, and he is just getting out of his room. He's causing havoc. He's playing with the cameras. And I think that when we do see the scene of him playing in the cameras and he's just like literally rolling around in circles in front of the cameras, I've been like, okay, something not right is going on here. I feel like this is deliberate. but yeah, so I just thought that when we get to the part and then he finally, like, he talks to Kevin as Patricia, because they're starting out to like, Ellie is getting into the horde's head, and so they're starting not to trust that the beast is really this powerful beast of a person. So all that's going on, so Glass is able to use that to his advantage to get them to help him meet the beast, and then pretty much get everyone to do his plan, which brings me to this whole comic book theme, which was very apparent in Unbreakable. It's very apparent in Glass, but in Split, I don't think it was really forced that much, which again, to me, is why I was like, I didn't even realize Split was a part of something until we get like the tie-in at the end. But if you hadn't seen Unbreakable, then you didn't really know what that, like, that was a tie-in. So I think that superhero theme, like Glass whole obsession with it and trying to control the narrative, and then also, I mean, alluding to what is actually happening in the real world with like our comic book movies and how it's become this mainstream thing now, that it wasn't really when Unbreakable came out. So just all of that tied into one. I think that I think it also has to deal with it being that Glass is the one who's like pushing this whole comic book thing, which is probably also a reason why I think it wasn't as apparent in Split. But I don't have a problem with it. And I do like how Glass kind of talks about comic books, because I mean, he's been obsessed with them for so long. And I do like to listen to him talk about it. And I also think it's so funny because Samuel Jackson is in like the MCU. So it's like, he's in this huge thing that's in a way tied to this one thing. I don't know. I think it's funny when you find those real life connections like that. But yeah, so I do appreciate that. But then, so we get to our ending where we have our twists. So the first twist is that everyone's dying and they're all dying pretty much at the hand of Elodie, who is apparently in some secret organization. Now that part, I did not even think was a thing. Like, I did not even see that coming at all, because come to find out, like, she's in some type of society. They all have clover tattoos, and their whole mission is to eliminate anyone with powers, whether good or evil, because there cannot be gods living in the lands, because then that's when we cause all this havoc and destruction and all these things. But Elijah's whole thing is that pretty much his twist is that he was not going to take you to what we would have been expecting, which was this big showdown and this big open place where hundreds of people are watching, which was the Osaka Tower, which he was saying that's where they were going. But his whole plan was really to have them have their showdown in the parking lot of the facility. So it's all caught on camera. So even after his death, before he died, he sends it to our family characters. So his mom, David's son, and the only girl. I'm like, why am I calling her the only girl? Because she is the only girl who survived. And the only girl, so that they could share it after their death, because he knows that he had no plan to escape this alive. So he sends that to them, and pretty much the thing that Ellie was working to fight against is pretty much what Glass ends up revealing, because essentially he calls it like an origin story, which means that this one thing will breed more things like it. So now people know like these powers exist. So other people who have these powers will probably start to make themselves known. And then therefore we lead into what we know today as our superhero mainstream thing. So yeah. So, I mean, was it a little convoluted? Yeah. Was it a shocking twist? Not really. I think the only thing I did not really see coming was the whole Ellie being a part of some secret organization type of a thing, which I guess she would have had to been if she was going to go through all this trouble, because like, who's going to fund it? But yeah, so overall, I think the acting was strong. I didn't have any issues with acting. Like, Samuel L. Jackson is like a legend in the game at this point, and I just think he just 100% commits to whatever character he's playing. So like, this old crazy at this moment now, he looks old because he has gray hair and he kind of looks crazy because everyone since Unbreakable has thought he's crazy. So he plays this crazy old man well, and like fragile, he looks fragile like really well. Bruce Willis, I mean, Bruce Willis is up there. He's also a legend in the game. He's up there in age, but he still came off as being super strong and like unbreakable, if you will. I already talked about Sarah Paulson and James McAvoy. So, I mean, performances I really didn't have issues with. My issues more so were like the overall plot. And a lot of people are also talking about the pacing. It was a slow start. And I've said this before. I don't have a problem with a slow burn if the end result is a great payoff. Was this a great payoff in the end? I mean, I think it depends on who you're asking. For me, I like for things to have an ending. And the fact that this had an ending, like them all dying, whether they were a hero or a villain, because really the only hero on this was David, but whether they were a hero or a villain, they all died. So, I mean, to me, that's pretty final. So I'm not expecting any more movies from this universe. So it's just going to be a trilogy, which I'm completely okay with. But yeah. So overall, I mean, there were some issues there. What else did I want to say? Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. So that's all I have on Glass. But I want to know what you guys thought about Glass. Was it what you expected? Did you expect the ending? Were they big shocking twists to you? Did you see it coming? I don't know all of that. Let me know. You can comment on Instagram on the most recent post or the post related to this episode at Currently Binging. As far as my rating, because, you know, I can't leave you without letting you guys know what grade I would give this. I think that I would honestly give this a C plus. I was thinking about this all day. I was like, what would I rate this? Because sometimes I'll see things in the ratings like automatic, even in the theater as I'm watching. I'm like, okay, I know what I'm going to give this. But this one, I really, really thought about it because it was just a combination of things. There were things that worked and there were things for me that didn't necessarily work, especially for this to be like the ending of this whole trilogy, if you will. So for me, I'm going to give it a C+. But yeah, that's all I really pretty much have to say. I feel like I'm getting so tongue-tied, so I'm just going to let you guys go. I will talk to you guys in the next episode. Stay up to date on new episodes by subscribing and following. You can find Currently Binging on multiple listening platforms, including iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play. Take the discussion beyond the episode by following on Instagram @currentlybinging and on Twitter @currentbinge.